Robert, you're talking about the age of the pyramids, the age of the Sphinx, and then when the break got us. So let's get back into that. There's been talk that it could be 5,000 or 10,000 years old, and you're right. The Sphinx does show some water erosion, doesn't it?
It does show a lot of water erosion. Let me go through this carefully, because I think it's important for the listeners to
sure.
to understand the battle that's been going on for the last 10 years or so, the so-called Battle of the Age of the Sphinx. It all started with John West, John Anthony West, the American mm-hmm. author, who had read a book by Schwaller de Lubitz, where Lubitz mentioned that the erosion that was visible on the enclosure wall of the Sphinx. Now, I think it needs to be made clear. The Sphinx is not actually a built monument. It's actually carved in the living rock.
Which was, you know, the whatever it was, this huge edifice of stone was there, and they shaped it, right?
Yes. Well, let's describe the scene sometime in the distant past. There was an outcrop of rock, which today is the head of the Sphinx. And they dug around that outcrop and exposed a much larger piece of natural rock, which they fashioned in the body of a lion. So the Sphinx, in a sense, is inside a pit or an enclosure. It's a kind of shoe-shaped pit.
Mm-hmm.
And it is on the wall of this enclosure that are very visible horizontal erosions and vertical erosions. Now, Schwaller de Lubitz was mentioning the horizontal erosion and kind of suggested that it might have been the Nile water that perhaps reached during the flood time. I'll be talking about the flood time in a short while. And that water eroded the sides of the wall, and therefore it might have been much older, because the flood waters did not reach in those in known history, but might have reached in prehistory. What John West did was to take on this suggestion and sort of went trooping around the various universities. He was sort of poo-pooed and shooed away several times, but as fate would have it, he stumbled on Robert Schock, Dr. Robert Schock of Boston University, a geologist, mm-hmm. who took an interest and actually went to Egypt. And what Schock immediately realized, being a geologist, was that it wasn't so much the horizontal erosions that were important, because these were obviously made by wind. Water does not do horizontal erosions, certainly not of the kind we saw on the wall. But what he noticed, that there were very prominent vertical fissures
mm-hmm.
that clearly were made by water flowing down the enclosure walls. And to cut a long story short, through his geological analysis, he concluded that whatever the age of the Sphinx was, it was not 2,500 BC, as the Egyptologists maintained, simply because the erosion that was analyzed by him required a much, much longer period to manage these deep cuts that he investigated. And of course, it fitted the climatic models that we now know, which gave a kind of rough range for the age of the Sphinx from 5,000 to 6,000 BC. So that was a few millennia earlier than right. than the established dates. Later on, Graham Hancock and I came on the scene, and I had proposed in my first book that the layout of the three pyramids were not just mimicking the layout of Orion's belt, but they did so at a very, very unusual time. The reasoning behind this was that the ancient Egyptians spoke of a beginning. They have a term for it. They call it Tep Zepi. It literally means the first time. And they believe that the god Osiris, who was identified to the constellation of Orion, had come in this period of the first time and established civilization. So the reasoning was, well, could we use the stars to establish this first time? And of course, this brought us to the phenomena of the precession of the equinoxes. The precession of the equinox, very simply, is that the Earth, we know that the Earth wobbles in a very, very slow cycle of 26,000 years, and this causes the stars to appear at different heights, at different altitudes, and at different angles through that cycle of 26,000 years.
Okay.
Now, the cycle has a beginning and an end, because if one measures it at the at a certain point, which is the south meridian, or if one measures Orion belts, it will appear to slide up and down like a pendulum moving vertically over a period of 13,000 years downwards and 13,000 years upwards. We looked at the beginning, or the lowest point, and that was the perfect fit, the kind of Cinderella fit of archaeology. The layout of the pyramids fitted precisely with the pattern of the sky. Now, here is the weird thing. When this occurred, the sunrise would be exactly at the vernal equinox, at the spring equinox, in direct alignment with the Sphinx. That was already a startling discovery, but as we looked at the stars that were behind the sun, one can do that with the computers these days,
sure.
We realized that the constellation that was right behind the sun was the constellation of Leo.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to us, clinched it. We had a kind of model of the sky that fitted, like I said, like a Cinderella shoe, at precisely 10,500 BC. And that brought in the science of astronomy in conjunction with the science of geology to confront the Egyptologists with these two hard sciences. And they've been debating ever since.
Why is it so controversial, Robert? I mean, why can't they say, well, maybe it is much older? So, you know, why do they get so upset?
Your guess is as good as mine, George. I mean, well, okay, the fact is that they... You know, Egyptology has been going on for the last 150 years or so. And we have established, or rather Egyptologists have established a chronology for Egypt. And, you know, this theory is, if indeed they're correct, would totally change the whole established view. We will have to push the Egyptian civilization several thousand years backwards, and they're not going to do it.
No, Zahi's not going to do that. That's for sure. Huh?
Yeah, well, Zahi will have, you know, many things were obstructed by the orthodoxy throughout history. And, you know, it's in many ways, it's understandable. I mean, they're not going to sort of change every textbook simply because there's a new theory. But if the theory sustains itself and undergoes the rigorous criticism that it's been going through, like I said, over the last 10 years, then, you know, the orthodoxy has to change. And we're kind of reaching that point, as you will see with Black Genesis.